Now, here's a very simple question that we talked about a while ago before we left off. And that is it necessary for a Jew to believe that when Hashem created the world, He created the world yesh me'ayin? Creatio ex nihilo is the Latin term, that God created the world from nothing. That's really where we left off. Can you be a faithful Jew, a person of deep and committed faith in Hashem and in His Torah, and still not be convinced that when God created our world, there was nothing before He created it, and everything came into being from absolute tohu va'efes, absolute zero? You know, certainly modern cosmology actually confirms a belief in creatio ex nihilo, creation of yesh me'ayin, because of the theory of the Big Bang says that there was nothing and then there was something. And what we're going to look at today are some different commentaries from the times of Rabbi Yehuda Halevi, from the Rishonim period, who provide us with some perspective going back 800 years to see how they believed in the creation process that is described in the Torah, and what their assertions were as far as how Hashem created the world. But before we do that, and we may actually have some chavrusa time today, because the Mor Nevuchim that I have copied for you is in English. And by the way, the reason why we do the Kuzari in English and the Mor Nevuchim in English is because the original language that these were written in was not Hebrew, it was Arabic. I don't see a benefit necessarily, if the translation is a good translation, I don't see a benefit necessarily in learning the text in Hebrew together with you, because that's a translation anyway. So if we're learning a translation, we might as well use our Mama Lashon and use the English and see what the best that we can cull from instead of breaking our teeth over medieval Hebrew. Okay, so we're going to look at the Ramban after we look. First, we're going to look at the Rabbi Yehuda Halevi, what he says about Yesh Me'ayin creation. Then we're going to look at the Ramban. And then we're going to look at the maestro. We're going to look at Maimonides. And we're going to see what he says in the Mor Nevuchim, which is quite perplexing. Even though the Ramban is the guide for the perplexed, we may become more perplexed after looking at the Ramban. Okay, so let's take a look first at our Kuzari. And we are on page 86. And on the top of page 86, we did this paragraph before the holidays. Before, I think sometime before Rosh Hashanah we stopped. And we did this last paragraph, which is the last paragraph of section 67 of the first essay, which starts with the small numeral 2. And the rabbi in this dialogue has just gotten through explaining to the Khazar king that the Torah never obligates us to believe in something that is counterintuitive or illogical. If the Torah tells us something, it is within the realm of acceptable logic, and it has to make sense. The Torah would never ask us to do something which goes against our mind. And therefore, if scientists or philosophers believe one way, and the Torah believes a completely different way, this does not mean that the Torah is going against logic or against philosophy. It just means that there was a fork in the road at one point in the intellectual pursuits of mankind, and the philosophical community or the scientific community turned left, where they zigged where they should have zagged. And they took a wrong turn. And it doesn't mean that they are wrong from a logical point of view or that the Torah is wrong from a logical point of view. Sometimes there are two equally acceptable pathways from an intellectual perspective that one can take to try and explain or provide a theory for all that is. And sometimes we get it right when we just use our mind, and sometimes we get it wrong when we just use our mind. I mean, we have this principle today. You know, scientists today are still trying to figure out what is called the theory of everything, which is try to find a unified theory to try and reconcile all that we know about subatomic physics. And we still don't have it all right, even after we discovered the God particle, like, You know, we spoke about a couple weeks ago in Parshas Bereishis. But the point still is that we don't have a unified theory to explain how you reconcile relativity with quantum physics and all of these other things that seem to be anomalous about our universe. And they come up with different theories about string theory and about this and about alternate dimensions and things like that to try and explain all of the sort of puzzles that exist in physics. And some of them are perfectly logical, but they're still just theories. And Rabbi Yehuda Levi's position is very simple. Aristotle was a very logical, brilliant thinker, very lucid thinker, and he came up with theories. These theories were never proven. They make a lot of sense. They seem to work when it comes to trying to apply things in a practical world. But that doesn't necessarily mean that the model that he provided is correct. He came to the conclusion that the universe has eternally existed. And therefore, there was never such a thing as creation, because he was not encumbered by having to commit himself to a biblical account of world history, because he didn't have a Bible. Aristotle lives in a society which is not committed to biblical text. And so he used his mind alone, and he came up with a theory of how the world exists today, that the world, how all of reality came into existence. And that led him to the conclusion of a steady state theory, I guess we could call that, that the universe has always existed the way it is. There was never such thing as a creation. Everything has eternally existed, and that's the end of the story. But that doesn't mean that the Torah's account is counterintuitive. It just means that there are two equally logical pathways to choose, both of which can have potential pitfalls, meaning that there are certain logical challenges to both views. Aristotle chose one path. We choose another path because we have a Torah that tells us this is what happened. We have a historical record. And when you have a historical record that is provided to you by the Almighty himself, then that trumps any logical argument. Okay? So that's basically the presentation of Rabbi Yehuda Halevi. He's not an anti-philosopher in this respect. You know, he has a lot of respect for the thinking of the philosophical community. He says, yeah, they're good guys. They think things through well. They're perfectly logical. But our Torah, the account of our Torah, is just as logical, even though it comes to a completely opposite conclusion. Now, in the last part of this discussion, Rabbi Yehuda Halevi discusses a middle ground position between the Torah's account of creation and the Aristotelian position of an eternally existent universe. And that is what he calls Plato's position, which is what he details in the top of page 86. And I'll just read it, because we're going to go off the page in just a minute. And he says, until now, however, I have been addressing only Aristotle's belief in eternal existence. Other philosophers, and this is all in the brackets, because it's not actually part of the original text, but sort of we're stooping it in to help bring us to where we want to get to. Other philosophers, while still believing in eternal existence, nevertheless believe that the universe in its current form was shaped from some primordial matter at some point in history. Were a Jew of faith to believe in some primordial matter that God used to create the current universe, and that this primordial matter had been used previously to create other universes as well, this would not constitute a defect of faith. Ultimately, he would still believe that this world had been created at some finite time, and that humankind stemmed from the first people, Adam and Chava. Now, so is it possible that when Hashem created our world, he was working with some materials that already predated our universe or our planet Earth? Yes, it's possible. As a matter of fact, the Mekubalim, the Kabbalists, actually discuss this, and they tell us that we're actually only one in a series of worlds that Hashem created. Rabbeinu Bechaya quotes this quite extensively, and he says that we're the fourth in a series of seven worlds that Hashem created. And the Tiferes Yisrael, in his Mishnah commentary, which is written in the 19th century, in trying to explain the existence of dinosaur fossils that archaeologists have just begun to unearth during his time, asks the question of how did they get here if they seem to predate the biblical account of how the age of our world. They seem to be much older than 5,770 something years old. And so the Tiferes Yisrael says, well, we know that we're not the first world that Hashem created. Hashem created multiple worlds before us. And the way that one can explain the fossil beds is that when Hashem created our world, there was a pre-existing planet, and Hashem just removed the topsoil, the top part of our planet, and started all over again. But there are fossils embedded within lower strata of the planet, because those are the remnants of the previous worlds that existed on this planet that we call the planet Earth. And so this does not seem, says Rabbi Yehuda Levi, to be heresy. If anything, it is consistent with a belief in creation, because you still acknowledge that at some point Hashem did an act of creation for our world. It may not have been Yesh Me'ayin. It may not have been from completely nothing. And God may have been working with prior ingredients, but it's still a new creation of the world that we know, the world that we understand as exists. There's a very interesting midrash that says that that comments on a Mishnah. The Mishnah says that it's not appropriate for a Jew to discuss publicly what existed before Hashem created the world. And the reason why it's not appropriate is because it almost is an insult to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because when you think about a construction site, and you talk about a construction site of a great palace that is being built for a king, were you to suggest that before the palace was built on this site, it was a garbage dump, and if you dig deep enough, you'll find some old garbage from the garbage dump and this palace was built on top of it. What do they call that in New Jersey? We used to always drive through that. The Kills is the dumping ground that you drive over when you're driving from Pennsylvania to New York. You got to go through a really smelly part of New Jersey. Some people would say that all of New Jersey is smelly, but anyway, sorry, no offense. But you know what I'm talking about? Where you drive through that smelly part, and you go, it's right near Staten Island, right? So, right. Oh, okay. So imagine for a second that you're building a palace over this huge garbage dump. That you don't want to recall that in the historical record of the king and his palace. And so if this world was really created on top of something that predates us, and there's just like fossil garbage, so to speak, underneath the world as we know it, that's why it's not appropriate to talk about it, because we want to glorify this world as Hashem's creation, and not to drudge up the past and sort of give us an image that there's just like gunk underneath us. But of course, you know that were it not for that gunk that's beneath us, we wouldn't have cars today. We wouldn't have anything that helps fuel all of the machines that we need for modern technology. So when you think about it, HaKadosh Baruch Hu did us a real toiva. He did us a real service by creating us not as the first world and allowing us to unearth the petroleum that ultimately comes from the fossils of previous creatures that he created in ancient, ancient past worlds. Because it's really fascinating just to think about those ideas. Yeah. In any event, a belief in this does not make you a heretic. Now, it's altogether possible. It's altogether possible that there's not really a contradiction between the two. Because if you've noticed, in this discussion, we very subtly shift between a discussion of a Big Bang, which is bringing all of reality, all of physical reality into existence, not just our planet, versus the creation of what we know as life on planet Earth. And the two are very, very different things. A Big Bang could have taken place, creatio ex nihilo yesh me'ayin, in 15 billion years ago. And our world, which we know in human history, only goes back a few thousand years, several thousand years, could have been built upon something that had been previously created on just our planet only, let's say, a few million years ago. So there really is not necessarily a contradiction. We have to distinguish whether we're talking about all of matter coming into existence, which would really be like a Big Bang, that's Yesh Me'ayin, versus just what comes into existence on the surface of our planet, which only goes back a fraction of time compared to the Big Bang. And therefore, that could be not Yesh Me'ayin. That could be something that God used pre-existent materials from a previous world to build upon and to build our to build what we know as life on this planet. Okay. We're not talking about evolution. It's not part of our discussion today. But at least it's interesting to note the two possibilities. Now, you have in front of you two commentaries that we're going to build upon from Rabbi Yehuda HaLevi. And I just use this for the purposes of comparison. We have the two great Rishonim that discuss philosophical issues, especially having to do with cosmology and creation, and they are the Ramban and the Rambam, Nachmanides and Maimonides. And even though Maimonides historically predates the Ramban, the chronology, by the way, is Rabbi Yehuda HaLevi dies in 1140. The Rambam dies at like 1203 or 1205. And the Ramban lives into the 13th century and I think dies about 60 years or 70 years after the Rambam. I don't remember exactly the dates. But first is Rabbi Yehuda HaLevi, then the Rambam, and then the Ramban. So that's why you find that the Ramban will many times comment on the writings of the Rambam. But we're going to see the Ramban before we look at the Rambam, because the Ramban incorporates into his discussions Kabbalah as well. And because by that time in the 13th century, Kabbalah is beginning to explode within the Jewish world. The Rambam was a suppressor of Kabbalah, and he offers us pure rational philosophical Judaism, and the Ramban incorporates both philosophical Judaism and Kabbalistic or mystical Judaism. Comes along the Ramban in his commentary to Parshas Bereishis in the very first pasuk. We're just going to read a few snippets that are underlined for us here. And the Ramban says, if you have it in your sheet, he says, Ve'ata shema perusha mikra al pshuton nachamu varur. He says, I'd like you now to listen to the explanation of the text of Bereishis bara Elokim esa shemayim ve'esa aretz, that in the beginning God created heaven and earth. He says, I'm going to tell you the very simple and clear translation of the text. HaKadosh Baruch Hu bara kol hanivraim me'afisa muchletet. God created all that exists from absolute nothingness. Ve'ein etzlenu b'lashon hakodesh b'hotzah tayesh me'ayin ela lashon bara. When we want to, in the Hebrew language, describe a bringing into existence from nothing, a yesh me'ayin kind of bringing into existence, we use the verb bara, bet resh aleph. That's the verb that the Torah uses in the very first pasuk. Ve'ein kol hana'asa tachat hashemesh olamayla hove min ha'ayin hatchala rishona. He says that anything, ein kol hana'asa tachat hashemesh olamayla, anything that is produced either below the sun or above the sun, meaning both in the physical or earthly realm and the celestial realm, was not created from nothingness, but rather it was a multi-staged progression of bringing those things into existence from a primordial creation. Aval hotzi min ha'efes ha'gamor ha'muchlat yisod dak me'od. And I want you to think about the Big Bang Theory when you're reading the words of the Ramban. God initially brought into existence from absolute nothingness a yisod, an element that is dak ma'od, extremely ethereal in nature, ein bo mamash, which really had no substance to it. Aval hu koach mamzi, but it was a force, some kind of matter or force, that had the potentiality to bring into existence everything else. Muchan lekabel hatsura, and this very ethereal matter was now primed or prepared to assume form, vilatzeit min hakoach el hapoal, and to emerge from the state of potentiality into a state of reality. These are philosophical terms. We're not going to define them now because I don't think that you get very bogged down in technical terminology. But the idea here is that this is the primordial matter that is waiting to assume the form of reality as we know it. V'hu hachomer harishon. And this is what is known as first matter. Nikra LaYevanim Huli. And the Greeks, meaning the Greek philosophers, Plato primarily, knew it as Huli, H-Y-L-E, is how you spell it in English or Greek or Latin, I'm not sure. Anyway, that's what it's called. And the Greek philosophers talked about this primordial matter that existed at the time of the very, very early stages of existence. V'achar ha-huli lo bara davar. And after God created this very ethereal, small, little kind of substance, God did not have to do any other b'ri'ah, which is creation of yesh me'ayin. Because that was the only thing that God created out of nothing, out of absolute nothingness. Aval yatsar ve'asa. But what God did afterwards is merely the verbs of yatsar and asa. He formed and he made. And those verbs imply working with some pre-existent matter. Ki mimenu himtzi hakol v'hilbish hatzurot v'tiken otan. Because it was from this hule that God produced everything else and adorned everything else with substance and with form and was able to rectify everything else in creation. Now were I to be able to contemporize the Ramban's commentary from the Greek philosophical model to the Big Bang of modern science talks about, in the Big Bang, the existence of a cosmic egg, or a very, very, very almost impossibly small first substance that created everything that exists in our universe, but super compressed into one little tiny point. And from that, there was something called a bang, a big bang, a huge explosion. And that explosion expanded into our universe as we know it. Doesn't it sound almost like what the Ramban is describing? It's uncanny. Which is why you have a lot of books today that reconcile Torah and science, and instead of saying that they're in conflict, which is what the initial knee-jerk reaction is of so many people in the Orthodox world today, instead we actually say, look at what modern cosmology has, a gift that they have given to us. Because up until very recently, relatively very recently, within the last 100 years, modern science said that the biblical account of creation was impossible. And now, with the advent of the Big Bang, when we make note of the fact that our universe is in a state of expansion, and we trace it back to one point of an explosion 15 to 20 billion years ago, we realize that creation, as is being described in the Torah, could actually have happened. And even those who talk about who are agnostic and talk about the deniability of God's existence still are left with the question of, well, how did that little cosmic egg get there in the first place? And what created the laws of physics to allow it to explode and turn into our universe? Who made the rules? And why do the rules exist the way that they do? And this is, of course, the source of a lot of speculation in both the scientific community and in the world of philosophy or theology in the world today. So all of these discussions that were taking place 1,000 years ago about philosophical speculation and the origins of our universe are continuing and ongoing today based upon modern scientific discovery. And that, to me, is something that's such an important thing that we should be talking about with our kids. And we should be teaching our kids about this. And we should be encouraging our kids to read books like Genesis and the Big Bang by Gerald Schroeder, or other books of that genre, which try and discuss in a scientific way the origins of our universe and physics and stuff like that. Because that's important stuff. It's important stuff because if our kids, they may not be exposed to it yet in fourth or fifth grade, but if we don't start talking to them about it in fourth or fifth grade, then they're going to think that we don't feel that there's any importance to a reconciliation between Torah and science. So by the time they get to university and they learn about modern cosmology, and they'll, of course, in conjunction with that, learn about evolution, because that's, they always go hand in hand, you know. Because once you believe in a Big Bang, you also have to believe that life on our planet started from really microorganisms and evolved and so forth. The two, by the way, the two don't necessarily have to go hand in hand, right? But they normally, inevitably do, because those two are prevailing theories that are accepted within the scientific community. If we don't start discussing it with our children, they're going to think that we don't invest any stock in science, in modern scientific discovery. And then they're going to be faced with a dilemma of having to choose between what the university tells them is real and what the Torah tells them is real. And then they're going to have some kind of identity crisis. And we see it all the time. We see it all the time in the Orthodox world. Yeah?
Are you passing that message along to the Orthodox faithful?
Well, if anyone's listening, you'll be my messengers, I hope. Yes?
So I'm just trying to understand, when it says at the creation time of Bereshit, Hashem bara, so if we're using the term bara in the creation of heaven and earth, are you saying that this is not in this fourth world generation, but that is only in the first one?
No. Well, yes, it's the Big Bang of the entire universe, is what the Ramban is describing. Now, the Ramban does not distinguish between our planet Earth and the coming into existence of the universe. I created that distinction in your minds to tell you that the two are not necessarily contradictory. But because for the Ramban, you know, there's no Milky Way, there's no galaxies, there's stars, there's planets, yes? But that's all part of our world. So for the Ramban, there's really no distinction between between our planet and the greater universe, at least not in this commentary that we see in front of us. So for him, everything comes into existence, yesh me'ayin, from completely nothing. Mm-hmm. What I'm suggesting to you is that a belief that our world is a part of a series and that God used prior materials from a previous world doesn't necessarily contradict what the Ramban is saying. It just means that the Torah is not describing that. The Torah, according to the Ramban, is describing the Big Bang, or the initial creation of something from nothing. At least in that very first pasuk, okay? Now, it's time for us to, if we just look at the very last line of our discussion, he says, "Vinei bebriya hazot, shehi kinekuda ketana daka ve'im ba mamash, nivru'u kol hanivroim ba shamayim uvaris." That's sort of confirms, Miriam, what I was just suggesting. He says, this initial cosmic egg, this initial primordial, very, very ethereal and small little piece of creation that God brought into existence, yesh me'ayin, which is like this little tiny dot, which has no real substance. From that little substance was created everything that exists in heaven and earth. You see, that's the last line from that last paragraph that I underlined for you. So you see that this is the way the Ramban is looking at the very first pasuk in Bereshis. It's describing some kind of initial creation from which everything else was created. But he feels it's necessary for us to acknowledge that the Torah is describing a creation of yesh me'ayin. And that for the Ramban is very important. He says that's why the verb bara is used in the first place. Now, we're not going to... Yes?
Can I ask a question? Maybe we need something like this dot, because we cannot, by definition, understand it. When I'm making salad out of nothing, it's like, I have nothing, I made a salad. It's actually not really nothing. I had a cucumber and onion, and I just... do you know what I mean? We cannot comprehend
the idea of yesh me'ayin.
Yeah, just by definition.
Sorry, so you're suggesting that the reason why God...
I don't really believe in it.
The reason why God did it this way is l'saber et ha'ozen, in other words, in order to allow man to be able to comprehend how things come into existence. So he did this progression, because otherwise it would be too mind-blowing to understand how everything coming out of nothing. That's an interesting theory, but I don't think that's the Ramban's motivation. We need to understand the world that the Ramban is living in to understand his motivation for explaining it this way. The Ramban is living in a philosophical world. Even in his philosophical / mystical world, there is a school of philosophy known as Neoplatonism, which is developed by the philosopher Plotinus that lives much before the Ramban, and his student Porphyry, who lives also much before the Ramban, who had developed a very extensive school of philosophical thought to explain the dilemma of physical multiplicity emanating from a singular creator. And that is a dilemma for a thinking Jew as well. The philosophical dilemma is this: how is it that creation is so dissimilar from the God who created it. If we believe, based on philosophical speculation, that the Creator is absolute unity, is completely devoid of any physical form, and is it is completely transcendent and above temporality, timeness, and space, time and space, then how could such a God, who is so different and so perfect, be the source of all that exists in the physical world, which is temporal, which is physical, which is flawed by nature? How does a God who is perfect bring into existence that which is so flawed and imperfect? That is one of the dilemmas, not only in Judaism, but also in general philosophical, medieval philosophy. It's one of the great questions of the day. And what the Ramban is describing is not of his own. He is culling this from Plotinus. He is suggesting that the Torah is describing the Neoplatonic theory of how the world came into existence. And that is through a series of emanations that come from God, that the initial creation was most similar to HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself. And just like HaKadosh Baruch Hu is completely unitary, indivisible, and ethereal and transcendent, so too must we conclude that the initial creation that God spawned off of himself must have been so resemblant to him that it must have also been unitary, ethereal, and extremely transcendent and non-physical. And only from that initial creation, the further away we get from God, are we able to see further and further distance, not only spatially, but also conceptually, that everything becomes more and more flawed, more and more physical, the further and further it emanates away from Hashem. That's the basis for why the Ramban says what he does. That's the backdrop that we're working with. The fact that modern science confirms it and says that there was a cosmic egg that emanates as it's this unitary speck of nothingness, and from that the entire universe comes into existence, then becomes truly remarkable, because now science confirms the Neoplatonic theory of how God can only spawn that which is most similar to himself. And that's remarkable. That's amazing. That's mind-blowing, the more you think about it. Yeah?
Is that suggesting that as the world expands, Hashem is farther from us?
No, we are farther from Hashem. In other words, the world becomes less and less similar to God the further and further advanced and solidified it becomes. However, there is a Gemara that in Chagiga that says that when God first created the world expanded like a spinning ball of yarn that sort of moves, the yarn becomes starts to unravel more and more and more. And then eventually Hashem said, stop! And the world became steady, and it stopped expanding. And that's the world in which we live. So at one point Hashem said, stop expanding and moving away from Hashem's unitary existence. And that's where we find ourselves in this world today. Yeah?
Does what you're describing, how does that tie in with the concept of entropy? From order, everything goes from order to disorder, which any housewife knows is true.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, entropy is a reflection of a physical world, of a physical universe. Right? And that is a description of the chaos within that still exists within the order of creation. It is the particles that continue to bounce around because of all of the energy that's in the world. Hashem still allows a certain level of movement and chaos to exist still within the creation. There's a constant struggle and tension between chaos and order within the universe, within the physical universe. So there is a solidification of physical matter, but within that solidification still exists a sense of chaos.
I think if you have entropy, it's because I'm checked. If Hashem doesn't bring energy to support the world, it will come. And if building is not constantly renovated and supported, it will fall apart eventually. Idea that entropy increases, but the fact that Hashem renews the world every moment, this is why we are, you know, alive and moving because we're renewed constantly.
That's a good point. It's a good point. The entropy may be a reflection of God's constant involvement within the world. Okay. We're not going to have a chance to get into the Rambam today, but let's resolve that this will be our first topic next time. And what I'm going to do is ask you to, at the end of Shir, return all of the sheets, because I'd like to use these for next week's class. And what I think we'll do at the beginning of next week is break up into Chavrusa study, have you look at the Rambam. I'll sort of tell you which parts I want you to try and analyze, and then we'll have you come up with your conclusions about the puzzle that the Rambam leaves with us in the Mora Nevuchim. And that's what we'll continue with next week.